Reading a book is like taking life by the throat. It's not just about absorbing information, it's about transforming your mind. Susan Wise Bauer's The Well-Educated Mind has become a modern classic for self-learners, selling over 500,000 copies since publication and appearing on countless must-read lists for aspiring intellectuals. Even celebrities like Emma Watson and Bill Gates have praised its approach to systematic reading. What makes this book particularly relevant today is how it addresses our collective anxiety about diminishing attention spans in the digital age, offering a proven method to reclaim deep thinking through deliberate reading practices. The year I turned 30, I returned to graduate school after years of writing, teaching, and raising four children. I dreaded becoming a passive student again after years of teaching. To my relief, graduate seminars weren't lectures, but springboards for self-education. I read extensively, analyzed arguments critically, and participated in Socratic dialogues where professors corrected our reasoning. Despite the grueling schedule, I found myself building new mental structures and thinking more clearly. But here's the liberating truth. You don't need graduate school to train your mind. For centuries, people pursued serious learning through independent reading and discussion. Thomas Jefferson advised his nephew that history could be acquired from books without professors. American women of the 18th and 19th centuries, despite limited formal education, kept reading journals, formed book clubs, and developed their minds independently. Self-education requires discipline, like running or voice lessons. Many adults assume they should be able to tackle Homer or Henry James without preparation, then feel inadequate when they struggle. But reading great literature requires different skills than casual reading. Classical education follows the trivium: grammar, absorbing foundational knowledge, logic, analyzing information, and rhetoric, expressing opinions about what you've learned. Most adults skip directly to forming opinions without properly understanding or evaluating ideas first. To begin self-education, focus on one subject at a time rather than pursuing multiple unrelated topics simultaneously. Read books in chronological order to build understanding systematically. Most importantly, carve out dedicated time for reading, preferably in the morning when the mind is fresh. Start with short sessions, 30 minutes, and gradually increase duration as the habit becomes established. Never check email before reading, as it disrupts concentration. Guard your reading time jealously against other obligations and distractions. Despite futurists' claims about our post-literate culture, serious reading remains essential for wisdom. While gathering information through skimming websites and social media may shift to multimedia formats, developing genuine wisdom requires wrestling with complex ideas expressed in precise language. Information merely makes us informed about facts. Deep reading develops enlightenment about ideas that help us make sense of those facts and connect them in meaningful ways. This distinction between information gathering and wisdom building becomes increasingly crucial in our digital age. Speed reading techniques may help with information gathering, but are counterproductive for serious reading. The pursuit of knowledge operates under different ethics than our computerized world, where faster is better. Serious readers aren't trying to assimilate vast quantities of information quickly, but to understand complex, many-sided ideas. This involves rereading passages, pausing for reflection, and allowing ideas to resonate. Just as a fine meal shouldn't be rushed, complex ideas need time to be properly digested and integrated into our existing knowledge framework. For readers struggling with slow reading or poor comprehension, the solution may lie in addressing foundational skills. Those taught by sight reading methods rather than phonics may recognize word shapes without truly decoding them, causing difficulty with unfamiliar vocabulary. This can manifest as stumbling over longer words, misreading similar-looking words, or avoiding challenging texts altogether. Remedial phonics texts like Phonics Pathways can retrain readers to decode words properly from left to right. For vocabulary building, dedicating 15 minutes daily to systematic word study can dramatically improve reading comprehension. This might include studying word roots, keeping a vocabulary journal, or using specialized vocabulary building programs. 6 principles guide effective reading. First, keep reading even when confused. You don't need to grasp everything on first reading. Understanding often emerges gradually through persistence. Second, make books your own. Underline key passages, write questions and insights in margins, and turn down page corners to mark important sections for later review. Third, begin by reading the title page, back cover, and table of contents to orient yourself to the book's structure and main arguments. Fourth, avoid extensive first reading notes. Instead, write brief chapter summaries capturing main points and questions. Fifth, use your journal to record questions and reflections separate from content summaries, allowing space for personal engagement with the text. Finally, after finishing, compile your summary sentences into an informal outline to create a comprehensive overview of the work. Advanced readers often develop additional strategies, such as creating concept maps to visualize relationships between ideas, maintaining a commonplace book for collecting meaningful quotes and insights, and engaging in dialectical note-taking by recording conversations between texts on similar topics. These practices transform reading from a passive activity into an active dialogue with the text, leading to deeper understanding and retention. The journal is essential to the self-education process, serving as the bridge between reading and understanding. Unlike modern journals focused primarily on personal feelings and daily events, the educational journal follows the time-honored tradition of the commonplace book, a structured repository to record external information and transform it into personal knowledge through a deliberate 3-part process: copying significant passages verbatim, summarizing content in one's own words, and evaluating through careful personal reflection and analysis. Even the most dedicated readers struggle with distraction in our hyper-connected world. David Denby, in his memoir Great Books, candidly describes his frustration at being unable to fully immerse himself in fiction reading, finding himself stopping repeatedly as life's complexities interrupt, from family obligations to work deadlines to daily concerns. This modern challenge of divided attention makes clear that simply reading isn't enough. We must develop systematic methods to fix our minds on the text and organize our reading to retain the skeleton of ideas that form the foundation of understanding. The most effective commonplace books throughout history evolved beyond mere collections of quotations to become dynamic intellectual workshops, including reflections, original writing, and detailed book summaries. E.M. Forster's commonplace book stands as a masterful example of this approach, containing not just carefully selected quotations, but also penetrating evaluations of his reading, keen personal observations, and comprehensive summaries that reveal his thinking process. Similarly, Thomas Merton's notebooks demonstrate the art of intellectual synthesis, seamlessly blending quotes from his vast reading with personal experiences and detailed reading summaries. This process actively connects objective learning with subjective understanding, fulfilling the classical education imperative that you not only comprehend, but thoroughly evaluate and thoughtfully react to ideas. To effectively fix information in memory and develop genuine understanding, follow this systematic approach. First, invest in a high-quality journal, either a durable loose-leaf notebook or blank book that lies flat for easy writing. Maintain a disciplined 4x weekly reading schedule, and when tackling each chapter, clearly write the title and date, read through once, carefully noting striking ideas with light marks, thoroughly summarize each major section in your own words using complete sentences, leave generous margins for later reactions and cross-references, and regularly review your summaries while writing your considered reactions in the margins. This methodical practice transforms passive reading into active learning, creating a personal repository of knowledge that grows more valuable with each entry. The journal becomes not just a record, but a dialogue between the reader and the text, between past insights and present understanding. Regular journaling helps develop the critical thinking skills essential for deep learning: analysis, synthesis, and evaluation. Through this practice, readers create their own intellectual autobiography, documenting not just what they've read, but how their understanding has evolved over time. Reading a novel's opening lines is like glimpsing light through an opening door. an invitation into another world. Some novels, like Hawthorne's The Scarlet Letter, open their doors quickly with vivid, immediate scenes. Others, like Garcia Marquez's 100 Years of Solitude, reveal themselves more gradually, requiring patient assembly of scattered details. The novel emerged from Protestant and capitalist cultures, where the individual soul was newly imagined as free rather than fixed in a feudal system. Novelists celebrated the individual while fighting intellectual suspicion by emphasizing realism over fantasy. As the form evolved, various movements emerged. Realism portrayed ordinary life in meticulous detail. Psychological realism focused on depicting the mind's inner workings. Naturalism treated characters as products of genetics and environment rather than free agents. After 400 years, the novel has come full circle. Metafiction admits it's only a story, with writers like Calvino standing behind readers shouting, "Don't forget where you came from." The tension between real and fictional has eased, allowing fantastic events to return as magic realism and plot to make a comeback. Reading a novel requires a systematic approach to fully appreciate its artistry and meaning. The first reading focuses on three simple questions. Who are these people? What happens to them? How are they different afterward? The second reading examines the novel's structure, point of view, setting, and style. The third reading evaluates whether you agree with the novel's core ideas by examining what the writer reveals about human nature through character qualities, narrative technique, and philosophical stance. Autobiography transforms personal experience into narrative, requiring writers to impose meaning and structure on their lives. Augustine invented the form in his Confessions by creating a narrative that selected only events supporting his spiritual journey. His innovations established the genre's enduring conventions, choosing a specific meaning for one's past, focusing on inner life rather than external events, placing the private self at the center, and identifying a pivotal moment of transformation. This selective process of memory and interpretation creates what modern critics call life writing rather than mere biographical documentation. The apparent artlessness of autobiography is merely an illusion, as writers unconsciously employ sophisticated literary techniques when restructuring their past. Authors use devices like foreshadowing, metaphor, and careful scene selection to craft their life stories. For instance, Benjamin Franklin's autobiography deliberately constructs his rise as an exemplar of American self-made success, while Maya Angelou's I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings weaves personal trauma into a broader narrative about racial identity and resilience. Critical interest in autobiography emerged significantly in the 1950s, with scholars like George Gusdorf recognizing that autobiographers half discover, half create deeper truths beyond historical facts. This dual process involves both memory and imagination, as writers attempt to make sense of their experiences through narrative structure. The autobiographical I differs from the self it represents, creating a paradox famously noted by Montaigne: "I have no more made my book than my book has made me." This observation highlights how the act of writing autobiography shapes both the story and the storyteller. For your first reading of an autobiography, begin by simply asking, "What happened?" and take the writer's assertions at face value. After identifying the main events, discover the theme that ties the work together. By determining whether the autobiography is primarily spiritual, organized around relationship with the divine, as in Thomas Merton's The Seven Story Mountain, or skeptical, organized around another theme like relationships or historical movement, as in Simone de Beauvoir's memoirs. Locate the life's turning point or conversion, the moment when the writer comprehends a great truth and changes direction. These pivotal moments might be dramatic, like Malcolm X's prison conversion, or subtle, like Virginia Woolf's artistic awakening in Moments of Being. In the final level of reading, broaden your view beyond the individual life to examine what conclusions the writer draws about their group or human nature generally. Consider how personal narratives intersect with larger historical movements and social issues. For example, Frederick Douglass's autobiography serves both as personal testimony and as a powerful indictment of slavery, while Primo Levi's survival in Auschwitz uses individual experience to illuminate universal aspects of human nature under extreme conditions. History is fundamentally an argument between different historians who compete to interpret and explain past events. Unlike novelists who create freely from imagination, historians must shape their narratives around documented historical facts, though they retain considerable freedom in how they interpret, contextualize, and connect those facts. This inherent tension between creative storytelling and historical objectivity has profoundly shaped the development of historical writing across centuries, influencing how we understand our past. Historical writing evolved over thousands of years, beginning with ancient kings' victory chronicles in Mesopotamia and Egypt that served more as propaganda than true history. These early accounts focused on glorifying rulers and their achievements, often blending fact with supernatural elements. The Greeks, particularly Herodotus and Thucydides, pioneered history as a coherent narrative meant to illuminate the past, distinguishing between myth and fact while focusing on great men's deeds and the lessons their actions could teach. They introduced critical analysis and the examination of cause and effect. Medieval historians then transformed history into a divine plan, with God at its center, viewing all events as part of a straight line from creation to Christ's return. This theological framework dominated historical writing for centuries, with monks and clerics serving as the primary chroniclers of their time. When reading history, approach it through three distinct levels of inquiry. First, ask detective questions about the story itself. Who are the key players? What exactly happened? When did events occur and in what sequence? Where did these events take place? Why did things unfold as they did? These basic questions establish the fundamental framework of historical understanding. Second, carefully scrutinize the historian's argument. What specific proof is offered for claims? How are various assertions defended? What primary historical evidence supports the claims? Watch for common reasoning errors that can undermine historical analysis. Multiple propositions masquerading as one simple statement, rhetorical questions substituting for direct statements, false analogies between different historical periods, argument by isolated example without broader context, incorrect sampling of evidence, hasty generalizations from limited data, undefined abstract terms that cloud meaning, backward reasoning from predetermined conclusions, post hoc fallacies that confuse correlation with causation, and oversimplified cause-effect relationships that ignore complexity. Finally, ask what the historian reveals about fundamental human existence and our place in the world. How does their interpretation help us understand not just what happened, but what it means for human nature and society? The modern approach to historical analysis also emphasizes the importance of considering multiple perspectives, understanding the role of bias, both in historical sources and in historians themselves, and recognizing that our view of history constantly evolves as new evidence emerges and new analytical tools become available. This critical approach helps readers engage with historical texts not just as passive consumers of information, but as active participants in the ongoing dialogue about how we understand our past. Drama offers a unique form of storytelling that follows the same historical trajectory as other genres. From ancient preoccupation with heroism and fate through modern realism to postmodern experimentation, but with distinct constraints and possibilities. Unlike novels that provide complete impressions, plays supply only one dimension, leaving sight, sound, and mood to directors and actors. The stage restricts storytelling physically and temporally, focusing on external action rather than internal thought. The earliest written plays come from ancient Greece, performed in enormous outdoor stadiums, with actors wearing heavy masks expressing single emotions. Greek plays followed a five-part structure: prologue, backstory, parados, chorus entry, episodes, scenes between characters, interludes, commentary, and exodus, climactic scene. Classical drama declined not because of Christianity, but due to barbarian invasions that destroyed the necessary infrastructure. drama found new life within the Christian church, whose worldview aligned remarkably well with dramatic structure. Church services themselves were theatrical, with scriptural readings involving dialogue. These evolved into mystery plays depicting biblical stories, which eventually moved from churches to marketplaces. Shakespeare and Marlowe revolutionized drama by creating complex individuals rather than flat allegorical figures. Their heroes are free to choose their paths, but rarely happy, suggesting skepticism about Renaissance optimism. When reading a play, first determine what gives it coherence, plot, character psychology, or exploration of an idea. For plot-driven plays, list the chain of events leading to the climax. For character-driven plays, examine what each major character wants, what obstacles they face, and what strategies they employ. For idea-driven plays, formulate the central concept and analyze how characters embody different aspects of this idea. In the final level of reading, take a more active role by seeing the play as something presented to different audiences across time, considering how you would direct and stage it to emphasize its theme. All poems are about God, love, or depression. Poetry is a periscope with two mirrors, the poet's presence and the poem's language. Unlike prose, poetry cannot be separated from its original words. Its form is its meaning. The poet never disappears from the work, always taking one of three positions: depressed, alienated from the subject, in love, embracing the subject, or invoking, channeling transcendent truth. When forced to define poetry, poets almost always resort to metaphors rather than technical descriptions. Robert Frost calls it taking life by the throat. W.S. Merwin compares it to joke-telling, where one wrong word ruins everything. Adrian Rich describes it as a concentration of the power of language. And Robert Pinsky likens it to ice skating versus prose's waiting. The earliest Western poetry came from the Greeks, beginning with epic poetry that preserved cultural memory through mimesis, the imitation of real life that brings understanding. Greek epic poetry relied on structural markers to aid oral composition, including formulaic plot skeletons, standard openings, and repeated patterns for common scenes. Lyric poetry reached its peak 3 centuries after Homer, performed with musical accompaniment and often as part of religious rituals. The Romantics made the I more present in poetry. Sometimes this I was identical with the poet, as in Wordsworth's conversational style, while other times it was an imaginative, mythical persona. Their poems typically began with natural scenes or emotional states, describing them carefully before connecting to larger cosmic ideas. Rather than "I think, therefore I am," the Romantic poets substituted "I imagine, therefore I am." When reading poetry, begin simply by reading without preparation. Poetry creates a direct meeting between reader and poet, and too much advanced knowledge can prevent this genuine connection. After the initial reading, examine the poem's form, which is essential to its meaning. Identify the poem's basic narrative strategy, analyze its syntax and meter, and study the poet's diction and imagery. In the final level of reading, resist reducing the poem to a simple declarative sentence and instead explore its complex ideas, examining tensions between physical and psychological elements, earthly and spiritual aspects, mind and body. The well-educated mind is not a static achievement, but a lifelong practice of engagement with great ideas. Through systematic reading across genres, novels, autobiographies, histories, plays, and poems, we develop not just knowledge, but wisdom. We learn to recognize patterns of human thought and behavior across centuries, to evaluate arguments critically, and to form our own well-reasoned opinions. This journey through literature becomes particularly powerful when we trace how similar themes, love, power, justice, freedom, evolve across different historical periods and cultural contexts. The classical approach to reading teaches us patience and humility. We begin by understanding what an author says before rushing to judgment, a process that often requires multiple readings and careful annotation. This method, known as close reading, involves first grasping the literal meaning, then analyzing the broader implications, and finally synthesizing this understanding with our existing knowledge. We learn to recognize our own biases and assumptions, to question not just the text, but our reactions to it. For example, when reading historical works, we must consciously separate our modern sensibilities from the cultural context of the author's time. Most importantly, we discover that reading is not a passive activity, but a form of conversation with the author, with the tradition from which they write, and with ourselves. This dialogue manifests in various ways, through marginalia, through discussion with fellow readers, and through the mental wrestling that occurs when we encounter challenging ideas. Great books often force us to confront uncomfortable truths or question long-held beliefs, making reading a transformative experience rather than merely an informative one. In our distracted age, the discipline of deep reading offers a radical alternative to superficial engagement with ideas. While social media and digital content encourage rapid consumption and quick reactions, sustained reading develops our capacity for deep focus and nuanced thinking. It reminds us that wisdom comes not from the quantity of information we consume, but from the quality of our attention. The well-educated mind is ultimately about developing the capacity to think clearly, to feel deeply, and to live more consciously in a complex world. This practice of systematic reading also builds a mental library of references and ideas that enrich our understanding of both contemporary and historical events. Whether we're reading Plato's Republic or contemporary political analysis, we begin to see how ideas echo and evolve across time, helping us better understand both the past and present. The habit of regular reading becomes a form of intellectual exercise, strengthening our analytical abilities and expanding our capacity for empathy and understanding.